Greetings, and welcome to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience podcast series. I'm your host, Henry Wixon, a partner specializing in intellectual property issues at the law firm of WilmerHale in Washington, D.C., and a member of the board of directors of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. Our guest today is Donna Edmonds, executive director of the Virginia Bioscience Commercialization Center in Richmond, Virginia. Based at Richmond's Biotechnology Park, the Virginia Bioscience Commercialization Center will serve as a key entry point for Israeli bioscience companies seeking to enter U.S. markets. The center will be able to provide Israeli companies with the full complement of services required to commercialize products in the United States. The Virginia Bioscience Commercialization Center will assist with business organization, intellectual property protection, regulatory approvals, market channel development, manufacturing, and sales and marketing strategy. In addition, the Virginia Bioscience Commercialization Center will assist Israeli companies in raising capital and in fostering research collaborations with United States counterparts. Donna Edmonds is also a member of the board of the Virginia Biotechnology Research Park Authority, the Intellectual Property Foundation of the Virginia Commonwealth University, and Critical Diagnostics, a biotechnology company. Ms. Edmonds is a founding member of the board of the Virginia Biosciences Development Center and a member of the Medical Advisory Board of Ahura Scientific. Let's join Virginia Biotechnology Association Executive Director Mark Herzog for an informative 20-minute conversation with Donna Edmonds about the opportunities and challenges facing the Virginia Bioscience Commercialization Center.
Well, Donna, thank you very much for joining us today. Why don't we start with telling us about your background and how you got involved in the life sciences?
I have a long history in the medical business. My original academic preparation is nursing, and I also have a degree in business. And then in the mid-80s, I ended up being recruited to work for Baxter International and took the opportunity that I thought was going to be about a six-month stint to move to the industrial side, or as we called it at that point, the dark side. Then recognize you really could do more for healthcare delivery by working well in industry than you could almost on the provider side. So my career on the industrial side has been, as I said, up since the mid-80s. I spent 8 years at Baxter with a really rich career there where I ended up having 7 promotions in 8 years, and then left that sector to do entrepreneurial things. I've done 4 or 5 startups. Founded a couple of companies, taken a company public, and have been on the board of directors here at the Biotechnology Park for 7 years now.
What was it like going from that big corporate environment, Baxter, to startups?
With inside Baxter, I was always the person that they gave the new program development to. And the interesting part was, with my background in clinical medicine as a nurse, I found that when I went inside Baxter, they didn't understand or they didn't appreciate the physician-patient relationship on the industrial side as much as they wanted to. So I spent a lot of time linking that, you know, and the real end user, the care that was delivered to the patient, to the products they were developing. So I often got involved in a lot of new programs. When I left it, I left to start up or to support a couple of companies that I've actually purchased or invested in from Baxter. When they got involved in Baxter, they ended up getting lost in the big corporate kind of muck and mire that you can get lost in. So I made a transition. The first year I was doing a lot of work with some of the companies I'd actually helped bring into the company at their request. And from that point on, it was just a series of opportunities that rolled up in front of me. So it was never, you were always working with leaner resources. I can remember bringing pencils to work, you know, on startups in cups in the beginning. But you, even at Baxter, I was working with, you know, sort of sorting resources wherever you could get them, pulling them together to drive towards a specific need. So it was, you know, it was just the same kind of thing in a little different environment. A lot less bureaucracy, and that was fun.
Oh, sure. And at what point did you know that the life sciences area was what you wanted to devote your life to?
Well, when you, as a, if you decided to go into nursing, in high school, that's a pretty early commitment. And then it was just a matter of moving through the different segments of the opportunities you had and finding which ones you enjoyed the most. And I always enjoyed the new stuff, the setting up the ICU, running the ER, running the departments that had the fast-moving, urgent decision-making tracks. And that proved very satisfactorily for me over in the industrial side.
And at some point when you were a practicing nurse, you shifted over to Baxter? Is that?
I actually was recruited from the hospital to run a large physician group. So I was general manager of a 62-man physician group outside of Chicago that focused on emergency medicine and urgent care. So over a period of time, I had responsibility for managing the departments in 10 hospitals around emergency medicine, working with the physicians, private practice physician group. And then from there, I was recruited to Baxter. So I had sort of a transition.
Oh, yeah. And so how'd you end up in Virginia?
It was halfway on my way to Florida in a sailboat. That is the truth. We came down the Chesapeake Bay and parked our boat in the Rappahannock River on our way to Florida, liked it, and never left.
That's great. And when was that?
The boat was parked in the bay in 1981, and we ended up spending a lot of summers here and finally ended up relocating. My husband and I are both still working, but we relocated our life down here and moved in 1995. And I went on the board of directors of the park about 1999. So I've been very active, downtown Richmond since then.
Oh, that's great. And since then, in addition to the park leadership, you've also been involved in some companies.
When I was first asked to be in the board of directors of the park, and that's kind of an interesting story we should tell too, I was running a company that was based in Toronto and was living in the area. And so at that point, I was running worldwide sales marketing business development for a biomarker company that had point-of-care diagnostics. So from that point, I was recruited to launch the first ischemia diagnostic in the world and travel to Denver from that point. And then I had the opportunity to work, find some technology in Germany that had some real leading-edge capabilities on as a device implant into the heart, and worked with the VCs who had recruited me to go to the ischemia company after we sold it to Inverness Medical. So we did I was the second in command there. It was a nice transaction. Inverness Medical bought the company. I was very senior, but back again in a large public corporation and decided I wanted to be more entrepreneurial. So founded the company and put it on the park so I could be more locally focused. And that company is in the process of closing a significant A round. And I resigned full-time from that company at the end of November to put my full-time effort into the commercialization center.
I see. And you mentioned the first opportunity you had to join the leadership of the park, board of directors. It was an interesting situation.
I met Bob Skunda in probably 1996 or 97, right after I moved here. Actually, it was 96 because I was leaving Baxter, and I had been working with a lot of the physicians at the university. I came here and said, I'm an ex-corporate executive that can start a company here in the area. I know that there's IP available. Is there management leadership that I could rally around it? Is there investment capital that I could sort of focus on to help pull some of this IP together? And we were short on management competency in the area. We had no VC money at that point. So I went and took some other jobs. But as soon as they were adding board members, the next round, Bob had the governor, asked the governor to appoint me. So I went on the board during that segment. And then was one of the founding members of the Development Center. So was here right before we hired Dave.
Right.
And was a founding member of his board and have continued to track the development. This opportunity actually is kind of the next step to make sure that we can now rally more venture capital, more companies, more critical mass to try to build the science in the clinical companies in Virginia.
Well, this new initiative you're talking about is the Virginia Biosciences Commercialization Center, apparently targeting the Israeli market. Can you tell us about how that started and what the goals are for the program?
Working through the incubator programs and working with, I sit on the boards of several small companies. I know you've interviewed Spencer Williamson in the past, but I was on the board of IntelliJEC when we hired Spencer. So as we've tried to help grow some of these companies, it became clearer and clearer that we couldn't expand organically as fast as we'd like to in the area. There just isn't a critical mass of, it's growing. I sit on the IPF Foundation, the Tech Transfer Board for VCU, so we're doing a better job of picking the right companies and investing them on our VCU too. But we needed another strategy that could jumpstart pulling more of these life science companies to the area. As we started noticing the emergence of Israel as a real huge opportunity for multiple life science companies, it's just as sort of an evolution of knowledge, some incidental interfaces with some folks, a recognition of the work we're doing in Israel at the state of Virginia level, and then beginning to study that as a market that's probably the most prolific in the world and most U.S. friendly. Mm. You started to recognize that that was a good place to look. So we worked with a couple of companies initially who had come to the States for another reason and stopped by to meet with us, recognized that we had a rare set of capabilities here, and then we started to focus on really a strategy to pull it together correctly. Key to that is the ability to have investment capital to support some of these companies on a gap funding basis. We have organized a fund that's called the Israeli Opportunity Fund, where a lot of the very wealthy Jewish community members who've been very responsive in the community have banded together to provide a gap fund for them. So that's organized now, and we're looking at the first investments. So part of the strategy was to make sure we had an angel group, which we could work with. We've gotten the rest of the investment community aware of what's going on, looking at these companies with them as well. Then probably the key to the initiative is the fact that Owens & Minor and McKesson, who represent, when you start to look at their offices here, the entire span of healthcare delivery from a products and services perspective, between Owens & Minor, which, you know, services all the hospitals, and McKesson, who services anything that's outside of a hospital, those folks have begun to stand beside us as partners in the initiative. They are helping us pick the companies. They're helping us give advice to the companies from a marketing perspective, and in some respects, helping actually do deals with them to execute relationships when it's a match. That capability is something that no other state in the country has. So if you put together investment capital, good management, the marketing advisory services, and potential business relationships with those two 900-pound gorillas, it sets us apart any place else practically on the planet.
That's great. What is it about the Israelis that makes them so prolific compared to the rest of the world in this area?
There was an interesting, well, first of all, culturally, they're very ambitious, very focused on survival and excellence. Over a period of years, there's been a couple of waves of immigration that have come to Israel from other countries, and the immigrants have been primarily highly educated folks. They describe the Russian immigration wave with a whole bunch of engineers landing in the country with nothing to do. And so the government stepped up and started saying, let's form incubators. They originally formed 23 incubators in the country. And then, it was very wise and strategic on their part. I wish our government would be quite as strategic about things like this. But they actually funded good ideas. If you brought a good idea to the Office of the Chief Scientist, they would fund you up to $400,000 per company to get them started. Now, in the beginning, there was a lot of that going on, and keep in mind that the country of Israel now has a population the same size as the state of Virginia, so we're not, from a scale perspective, we're not talking about the size of the United States.
Sure.
So they could get started on a smaller scale, but they did it. And those 23 incubators over time have evolved into 900 life science companies with 300 ready-to-market products.
That's amazing.
So it's been a period of about 15 years for the evolution, but those early ideas have gradually migrated into a variety of different areas, and they've just built the critical mass. More people, more money, more science, more lawyers, more regulatory people, and the critical mass has just really, really blossomed. Of the incubators, I haven't got my stats completely right, but there's about 10 that are no longer, it's probably between 10 and 15 that are no longer public. They're either privatized and owned by investment bankers, or there's a couple that are public companies. There's a couple that are managed by wealthy individuals then who are taking their own wealth. There's one company, family called the Zisperls, that have six companies on NASDAQ now, and they literally manage an incubator called Rad Biomed, one of the better ones in the country, in Tel Aviv. And we actually have two companies that are working with us from Rad Biomed, and one working with us from the public incubator called Xenia. There's a press release about last week that Xenia has declared this location and this part their preferred landing pad for their companies when they go to the United States. So we're actually forging relationships to make kind of a fast track right from Israel here directly. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of in the background, in the ground, kind of stealthy till we got more of a critical mass going here. But we really did focus on making sure we had companies that are, post-incubator. This is the next step from an incubator. Post-incubator, strong CEOs, funding already, obviously needing more funding as they grow. But they really had the critical mass of having good management, some funding, a good market product, a marketable product, good strategy, and needing to launch in the U.S. right away.
Sure. So when you're talking to these Israeli companies, what is it you're saying to them about Virginia? You're obviously saying that there's this group of local investors that you've lined up. You have the large companies like McKesson behind your efforts. But what's the sales pitch like to get these companies to look closely at opening in Virginia?
It's really the total capability. It's the wrap of everything. It's the marketing partner. It's the financing partners. Now, again, we don't promise that they're going to get any funding, but we certainly position them ahead of other companies if they're here. The marketing partners have committed to be supportive, and in fact, if it makes sense, if the product's good, look at them hard. The investors have all said, we can't guarantee, but we'll look hard. And they have an inclination to focus on this group over others. But again, they have to compete for it. We talk about the location and proximity to Washington. Probably the thing that they are resonating to most, and we've now had physically, well, we had 17 folks from Israel in December here for the program. And prior to that, we've had bits and pieces of visits, maybe three or four at a time. And each one of them has come away saying, Richmond feels right-sized to us. This is a city we can be comfortable in. The fact that you've got an academic medical center, whether we use that one or not, for sure, across the street where you can walk, talk to a doctor, and you can get in the car and go 30 seconds to an engineering school. It's the critical mass of all the capabilities around us with access to Washington, and it's not expensive New York.
Right.
Up till now, New York has always been the place where they went because of the dominance of the investor industry, Boston too, but the dominance of the investor industry and dominance of other folks who've been Jewish, and they're comfortable there. Okay. And with the sort of recognition that we have a very active, very community-oriented Jewish community here as well, suddenly this feels like a place that is affordable, comfortable, right-sized, and easier to move around.
Right.
And we've even had a couple of venture capital firms suggest they were going to put their U.S. offices here.
That's great.
Which was a pretty remarkable statement on their part.
Sure.
So it's all about building some targeted critical mass in the area to grow the region.
Mm-hmm. And what role has the state of Virginia played in any of this?
None.
And that's because...
That's a very sore point.
Right.
I shouldn't say none because actually the Virginia-Israel... advisory board, VIAB, brought the first Israeli company here. They've helped us develop all the facilitation of the relationship. So from that respect, when I say none, it always means none financially to
right.
me because of
right.
all the effort. I mean, we don't get enough support. We all know we don't get enough support at all from the state. on these kind of things. And we're the only state that doesn't have funding for biotech parks, etc. But that aside, Ralph Robbins, who is the head of the Virginia-Israel Advisory Council, has been a real cheerleader and a real facilitator in helping us make sure that we at least got to the right people. But we, I mean, it's only been his ability to facilitate things. There's been no other funding. We've had to bootstrap this all along. And I personally took a significant financial hit to put my time into this to help make this happen. So it really has been people volunteering.
Right.
People, and, you know, the chairman of the scientific advisory board is Dr. Ken Zaslav, who's an orthopedic surgeon in the area. He was on the VIAB board. He flew to Israel with us on his own funds and took a week off of his practice to do so. So there's been a lot of people put a lot of effort and, you know, real financial skin in the game for this.
Absolutely.
And the state hasn't. I'm going to say that again.
Yeah.
Except for Ralph.
That's right. That's right. So can you give us an idea of what the timeline looks like on a go-forward basis? What sort of the big milestones might be that you're looking at in the next 6 months or year?
Well,
or so?
January 1 was the kickoff, the official kickoff. We filed. It's the Virginia Biosciences Commercialization Center is its own standalone entity. It is a for-profit entity that was licensed in the state at the end of right at the end of December. We signed contract. We have 8 companies we're working with. 2 were already under contract. We signed 4 yesterday, and we have 2 more in the mill to get done in the next couple of weeks. So we have the work that's done beforehand. It's sort of the culmination of the real kickoff. We'll be sending out press releases on some of the new companies over the next 2 or 3 weeks as some of their products come out of the FDA, because that's a good time to talk about not only the product, but the fact that they're here.
Sure.
So we have, you know, everything from a biotech firm that has a real revolutionary antimicrobial, antibacterial kind of a product that can be embedded in linens and anything that is a fabric to reduce or eliminate MRSA in the hospitals and in operating rooms, or any nosocomial infections, at least reduce it, to a couple of companies with very innovative endoscopic surgical devices, to a diagnostic company to detect lung cancer, you know, just a variety across the board that we'll be working with. And then we'll be going back to Israel in the middle of the summer or the early summer to take a look at next steps.
Well, you've outlined your career path, going from being a nurse to working for a major company like Baxter to startup companies, and now helping provide the funding and the facilities and support to new emerging companies. A lot of economic development is now part of your portfolio. Can you tell us anything about what you've noticed about the industry over the last 20-some years and where you think it's going in the future?
There was a time you could bring a product to the market if it was technologically advanced. And you could get physicians behind it, and you could motivate people to improve their care. Everything, along with that, everything has to be cost reduction at the same time. So even the best product in the world cannot be adopted unless you have a strong economic story behind it. So reimbursement and the strategy around reimbursement become more and more important every time you talk about a product. So healthcare industry, I mean, everybody knows it's being run more like a business, but more like the fundamentals of a manufacturing business than a service business. When it became a business, it became a service business. Now it's going from a service business mentality to a, when I say manufacturing, systems become more important. Operational efficiencies become more important. So service is critical as well, customer service. But you're starting to see even the systems evolution. So from a healthcare delivery perspective on the provider side, it's all about quality and efficiency.
Well, Donna, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast. For more information, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org.